Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast, episode 198, where tonight we're going to talk about the Kansas City Regional, round number 8 of the SCCA. We will be talking about F1 and the Hungaroring Grand Prix, as well as all of the latest in IndyCar, Mazda Road Indy, and Rally.
Higher performance and faster and more reliable.
You are listening to the Open Paddock Podcast, bringing you the finest in rally, Formula One, IndyCars, Mazda Road to Indy, sports cars, and other news from all around the world of motorsports. Now, here is your hosts, Sean, Mike, Doug, Mike, and Kevin.
Everybody, and welcome to the show. Sean, joining you as I always do. I have with me tonight Mr. White. So hello, sir.
Good evening, everyone.
We have... Go ahead.
I'm in the midst of my shopping spree for Mid-Ohio weekend. Woo-hoo. Doug, cigars shall be had by all.
Yay! I made a poor buying decision just earlier this evening in buying cigars, and I have deep buyer's remorse right now. I'll smoke them, but...
I'm bringing La Gloria Cubana. Oh, they're so good. They're so good.
Bueno, bueno.
I can't wait. I can't wait to go. It's Mid-Ohio weekend. Yay, yay, yay. Oh, diecast cigars and drunken Sean yelling at Doug from a mile away.
Sounding like a little girl.
Exactly.
I like Candy Crush!
If I beat level 31 of Candy Crush, then perhaps you will hear me yelling like a girl as I beat level 30 of Candy Crush after a month of trying to beat level 30. I beat it right before the show and I got ecstatically happy and I was, I was really happy about it. And of course, I made several crucial mistakes because the guys were actually on the phone. So I forgot about that. But yeah, anyways, enough of that. Let's see here. We also have Doug. Hello, Doug.
Hello, sir.
Yes, we'll get to it.
I think we need a moniker for you, sir.
What's that?
Captain Slow.
I am not Captain Slow. I was three wheels. Did you even have a picture of you three-wheeling your car?
Captain Slower than me.
I three-wheeled your car.
Hey, are you counting side points?
Listen.
They're counting time.
Clearly, Doug's mechanical grip program in the off season has been working his way for.
He definitely had the mechanical grip. That's what we will say because it was since we're into it, we'll get into the Kansas City portion now. It was a great weekend. I do concede defeat to you, Doug.
Wait. Mike's here.
Oh, Mike. Oh yeah, we have Mike. Hello, Mike. He's the intern.
Good drinking,
okay.
Everyone.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he's here. Sorry.
Trash started. That was it. Everything else went to hell.
Exactly. No, I concede defeat. You're a gracious winner, Doug. Not Mike. You lose. But no, just kidding. But you're a gracious winner. It was a great race. While you say that you thought that you expected me to finish closer, I myself finished actually better than what I thought I was going to. I had doubt. I will say the night before the event, I had the one thing that racing drivers should never have, and that is doubt. That I could do it because you got to look at it. You designed the course. It was your car. I hadn't drove in 5 weeks. 5 years. All excuses, yes. But those things weighed on my mind, and I thought for a good portion of the night as I was talking to the gal friend as she was over at the house. I told her. I said, I don't think I can beat him. I said, I don't think I can do it. I said, I think I'm having second thoughts about this. And when I got out there, I knew it was really bad. And the first one was really bad. And then finally, it all clicked on the third run. And then the fourth run, as you will attest, you have to attest that you were nervous.
I was nervous, man. I really was. I thought, holy crap, he's looking really good out there.
You shouldn't have told him that the tires can squeal.
I know, right? I said, no, squealing is bad. Don't let him squeal. You'll lose grip.
Exactly. I was trying not to squeal the tires, and it all clicked on the third run when Doug said, "What are you doing? You should squeal the tires."
Yeah.
And I said, "I should."
The hell out of them.
And then I went out there and absolutely drove his car like it was actually his car because I didn't have to pay insurance. And I punished that car on the third run and put a really good run together. And then the fourth run, I had it. Or at least I was damn close to having it. I mean, this is talking Ayrton Senna, last lap. Everybody's watching. Doug is actually out, like, on the track practically, watching the run.
I was.
And it was awesome. And you can see the picture on our Facebook page. It's actually our Sebastian Vettel helmet cover. I was actually three-wheeling. I was pushing the car absolutely to the limit. Three wheeling is something that you typically see with minis.
Yeah, they're well known for that.
Not necessarily focused. so
yeah,
I was...
I'll admit that was on a stock suspension with struts that have 150,000 miles on them, so they're not the freshest out there on the paddock. And so yeah, that was hard driving, sir.
It's like I told you, though, right before, I said, when in doubt, flat out, and that's exactly what I did. And to my detriment on the last corner, as I went careening off the track, almost took out the porta potty, which ironically, my kids were using at the time that I lost.
that would not have gone well.
You cannot make that up, because as I was sliding and losing control, they were actually there, because when I drove back around to the paddock area, which was like 2 seconds later, I seen them walking back from the porta potty. So they were literally there as I was careening towards it at like 45, 50 miles an hour in the grass, flat out, annihilating cones, the whole nine yards, and I took out everything but the timing box.
Yeah, and so yeah, here's how it went down. Sean puts in a 56 flat, and you've already admitted you're being gentle, you're learning the course, you're learning the car, so you weren't flat out. It was a slow time, and I put down a 49.77
with a 2 second penalty.
Well, 4 seconds. I picked up two cones, and so I picked up a 4 second penalty. Second run, Sean really picked it up, puts down a 52.5, and I was able to, I went a little bit slower, I went a tenth slower, but I still picked up a cone.
Which, might I add, the announcer lost his mind when I shaved 4 seconds off of my lap.
Oh, he did. And then you shaved another 2 seconds to lay down your fast time of a 50.5. All three of your first three runs were clean, by the way. My first two were dirty, but then I threw it down with a 49.4 clean, and that's what prevailed for the day. Our last runs with overheated tires, both of us, you picked up a little time.
I was half a second faster, but got penalized for three cones.
Yeah, 6 seconds, as you nearly took out the timing lights in the porta potty.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Almost.
I'll tell you, though, I was serious about the last run. I was serious. I got in the car early. I had the helmet on early. I wasn't listening to anything. I was like, I have to beat this lap. And I rolled up to the stoplight, or the flagman. I sat there, and I just was looking straight. I was thinking of nothing except for every nook, every cranny of that racetrack. And I was absolutely blitzing the opening section, and then it all went terribly wrong. And it went from being the Michael Schumacher of laps to being a Ken Block.
Special.
But that was awesome time. I want to thank everybody. I will be out there. Actually, Doug, I've come to the conclusion I may front you some money for this, but I may not actually race the Jetta because I want to challenge you next year. I want to challenge you next year over the course of a full season for the championship.
Hey, that sounds like a plan.
I will beat you for the championship. You have won the battle. I will win the war.
So we go halvesies on a set of rivals, and
there we go.
And we have a season-long wager.
Yep.
Sounds like fun, man.
It's done deal. Wrote in stone as it was. Whatever. Anyways. All right. Well, we will. So tonight we're going to talk about. Rally with Kim Block taking the New England Forest Rally. Some interesting drama, and we will be talking. Well, obviously. This weekend, all the guys, well, at least all the, as we call them, the founding fathers anyways, will be at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course for the Mid-Ohio race weekend. So if you are out there, hit us up on Facebook, send us a message, something, get a hold of us. We want to drink beer and copious amounts of alcohol with you. So please allow us the honor. Doug can't do that because he's being a photographer.
But yeah, they kind of frown on that.
Are you watching the race Sunday, Doug? Are you photographing?
A little of both. I plan on shooting grit, you know, as they're gritting up for the start of the race, and I will shoot the race start in the first couple of laps there from the S's, and after that, I think the credential goes to the pocket, the race ticket comes out, and I'm smoking stogies and drinking beers.
Nice. Or gin.
Because by then, all of the, you know, the only shots that I really won't be able to get would be the podium. But the victory circle, or, you know, the podium area there at Mid-Ohio is so cramped. It is so cramped that, I don't even want to mess with it. We need a podium shot. We'll get it from IndyCar and thank Chris Jones profusely for it.
All right.
But
okay.
My focus is really going to be the Mazda Road to Indy action and really trying to get as many shots of the drivers themselves in grid and in the garage area and stuff as I can. I'll get into that later, but I already have a couple of interviews lined up. Looking forward to it. Should have some great stuff to share.
Sweet. Well, can't wait. All right. Well, let's get into the action this weekend, the big headline event was the Formula One race from the Hungaroring. This was the last race before the summer break, which we are currently on. So all the teams were looking to push as far as they could to try and close the championship points gaps there before heading into the 3 weeks. And then we get into the more traditional circuits, such as the Spa, the Monza, stuff like that. So, yes, I can't wait. I've already been watching videos from the early 2000s for F1 at Spa because I like the V10 sound with the Spa. It just, oh my goodness, there's nothing better. So we will be getting into that portion. But before we could do that, we had to go to the Hungaroring and we had to navigate the boredom obstacle that was Hungary. So,
I caught up on my sleep.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It was not a problem.
I didn't find it super boring, actually.
Did you
watch the event?
Yeah, I will admit, it wasn't quite as bad as it usually is. It was not great, but it was not as awful as I've seen it within the last few years.
Well, I think one thing that definitely helped the event is that you didn't have a Red Bull domination the entire race. And there were storylines playing out, some strategies playing out that prevented Vettel from really moving to the front. Like, I don't know, like at the beginning, it looked like he was primed to do. It ended up being a pretty decent race.
And they all planned for it, where it was going to end up really coming down to that last stint.
Yeah, it was great for a strategy standpoint. A couple things happened that were really not fantastic. So it was some penalties that we'll get into. But getting into the qualifications, just real quickly, to highlight the top five, Lewis Hamilton was able to take pole position in the Mercedes. Nothing really new here. He's been lighting it up all year in single-lap pace. The Mercedes is finding out, hey, maybe we should do what Red Bull does and set awesome opening lap pace and set on pole position to figure out how to get the minutes. Sebastian Vettel finished second in qualifying. Third was Romain Grosjean. Fantastic effort from him, to be honest. And the Lotus looking really good. Rosberg was fourth in the Mercedes. Alonso fifth, kind of languishing in fifth comparatively speaking.
But kind of where we've expected to see him in qualifying this season.
Yes, and we will get more into how that plays out here later with some other news. We also had Kimi Raikkonen P6, Massa 7th, Ricciardo 8th, continuing to impress in the STR. But this is usually about when the STR comes on pretty strong, is usually about this part of the season. Sergio Perez 9th for McLaren Mercedes, and then Mark Webber was 10th. Notables, Jenson Button was out in Q2 and qualified P13. And that's really about it.
It's the only thing worth noting. And like you said, that really, that 13th is notable because it does come into play here shortly.
Yes. It does. So we actually got into the race, and Lewis Hamilton, the guys at Mercedes, really thought it was going to be difficult for them to take the victory. They thought they had no chance in hell because the tires were – it was really hot at the track, obviously. They were talking about record temperatures. They're pretty close
like
to it.
105 degrees hot.
Yeah.
It was bad through the weekend. It was bad.
And they –
they were saying that the degrees in Celsius, and I'm trying to do the conversion in my head, and I'm like, that can't be right. That's hot.
Once they get into the 40s in Celsius, forget about it.
Yeah.
So it was definitely interesting because the Mercedes, obviously tire degradation has been the word of the season for them, unable to convert.
And everybody else had the benefit of the testing of late, the young driver test come tire test. That Mercedes was not allowed to participate in, though they got some data from. And we didn't know exactly how that would play into their hands this weekend, if it would be a major detriment or not. But I don't know. It looked like they did pretty well because Hamilton was able to stay in front, at least in the first stint, though he did pit earlier than most of the other front runners. He ended up pitting around lap 8 from the lead, though.
Continue.
He pitted around lap 8. Vettel pitted around lap 10. And that kind of put them out there. But when Vettel came back out, when both of them came back out, Hamilton was immediately behind Jenson Button, who started 13th. Yes, and Hamilton got immediately by Jenson Button. However, when Vettel also got out behind Button, he was there for 10 laps.
Help me!
And during that stint, he actually was attempting to pass and managed to incur some damage on his front wing. So Vettel had some minor damage to the front wing, and they immediately started pointing it out on the broadcast. So that kind of played into Hamilton's hands, because later on in the race, the second round of pit stops, the same thing happened again. And Hamilton ended up getting around Vettel, getting around Button immediately.
Hamilton got around Button, though, he forced his way. I mean, he wasn't polite about it.
That's true.
Vettel actually was a little more timid, you might say, and being careful. But boy, Hamilton, he was just shoving his nose wherever.
Yeah.
It was classic Lewis Hamilton. You know, he was really just kind of diving in and and being the bold driver that we saw him be in his first couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Playing chicken and Button flinched.
Yeah.
Is that a Mr. Neely that I hear?
It is.
Sir.
And joining us tonight also is Mr. Neely,
our special guest.
Fresh from the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the world's loudest tires, by the way. Screw you, Kumo. Nice.
Nice. That usually happens when you drive your swamp buggy knobbies down the middle of the interstate there, man.
Yeah, well, that section of interstate has been under repair anyway, so it's like, You take my noisy tires and put it on noisy pavement, and it roughly makes the sound of a top fuel dragster.
Wait. So what you're telling me is that they don't have an engine noise problem in Formula One. They just need to pick the right tire manufacturer.
Exactly. If Formula E and Formula One would both swap to the Kumho tires that I have, then noise would not be a problem at all.
Nice.
Once again, screw you, Kumho.
Nice.
I'm going back to
this episode console. Brought to you by our new sponsor, Kumho Tire.
I highly recommend the Continental Extreme Contacts. So I had them on the Mazda all for a day before I got rid of them. Before I got rid of the car, that is. So, but the day that I did have it, I drove the living hell out of it, and they were awesome. So
I have heard like great things about those Continentals. I almost bought a set of those for the Focus.
Yeah, the pure
for daily drivers.
Yeah, the pure contacts are really, or the extreme contact or whatever they call them, are really good. I like the tires that you had, Doug, because there was a lot of grip. There was nice. A lot of grip on that car. Anyways,
so about right, Romain so Grosjean.
Yeah, about Sorry. Grosjean. Yeah.
Sorry, Jim.
No worries.
Yeah, Romain Grosjean was having a career day with a potential to actually take his first Grand Prix win, and then it all went wrong.
Yeah, Romain was having some issues getting around Jenson Button as well, and he drove as he normally does, and going into the chicane, man, he bumped Jenson pretty hard and ended up straight lining the chicane and went on from that. After the race, he was assessed a 20-second penalty for that contact, but then within a few laps after that incident that wasn't reviewed until after the race, within a few laps, he also had some interesting racing with Felipe Massa. And they gave him a drive-through penalty for that contact, which after the race, Massa was like, he really didn't deserve that penalty.
Yeah. No, he didn't at all.
Yeah, so I think it might have been kind of a culmination of things, but really what happened with the Massa event is he got past Massa and then drove off track.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing.
Like pass. Everybody else did.
Yeah, well, fair
well,
enough.
Well, that's the
but
thing.
If your name wasn't, in the top five list there, then they didn't, right.
That's the thing. Well, that's the thing with Grosjean, though, is the fact that given his antics, if you will, over the last couple seasons, obviously he's going to be much more under the microscope than he probably would have been. Had it not been for what happened last year, he very well could have been not assessed anything. But given his track record, of course, they were like, well, we're going to penalize him, whether he deserved it or not. He obviously didn't deserve it. If Massa didn't think he deserved it, much of the Formula One community didn't think he deserved it. Buxton had stuff to say about it. All the pundits had something to add to that. But then again, you just simply cannot drive like you did last year. And then when you hit somebody, be like, oh.
So why do I find it completely appropriate that most of Romain Grosjean's helmet is red?
Gotta have the red mist, man. So
are you saying the conspiracy is Romain is going to Ferrari next year?
No.
That's what I just heard.
No.
I'm starting that rumor. So anyways, but that was very interesting. Also noteworthy during the race was the fact that Lewis Hamilton and the Mercedes were able to actually hang on. Yeah. We didn't see – now, granted, he had some luck. Definitely had some luck on his side.
But he did not have any tire issues.
No,
he did not. Like they completely evaporated away. Whatever issues they had earlier in the season with this newer compound tire stuff, no issues at all.
Yes, it was a fantastic run for the car. It was a great run for Lewis. I don't want to say that he really got lucky, but he kind of got some good breaks with Vettel getting hung up. So he definitely deserved it because he pushed like hell to get that win. And he even said in the post-race, I was listening to it on 5 Live on the way to, because my satellite radio gets 5 Live. Yeah, checkered flag. Favorite podcast for Formula One stuff ever.
That's awesome.
Great podcast. It is great. But he said, he's like, I wanted it today. I was not going to be denied victory. Because the tires were hanging on. So that's a huge coup for Mercedes, who were worried about their tires, especially not able to participate in the young driver Silverstone/tire test that happened at Silverstone, but great job for the Mercedes guys. Now, one of the things that they're talking about is potentially the title race being blown open because Hamilton was able to secure a good victory. While I say that it's more possible than it was Saturday, I'm going to say that it's highly unlikely that we're going to see Lewis Hamilton really he may impact the championship from the standpoint that he could steal some points, but we're not talking about Lewis Hamilton winning the championship. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So overall, though, for the race, going into the results, just give you a quick rundown here. Hamilton first. Kimi Raikkonen with a fantastic drive to second. Sebastian Vettel third. Vettel was actually challenging Raikkonen there at the end of the race, and Raikkonen kind of threw a nasty little move on Vettel there to secure second place. Vettel thought that he was not given enough room, but they all went and probably had some vodka afterwards, and all was right in the world.
Yeah, the quotes after the race was Vettel kind of approached Kimi about that, and Kimi just laughed at him.
Yeah.
P4 for Mark Webber, so a fantastic run for the Aussie, helping Red Bull's cause and securing points, because when you really look at it, the rest of the guys, Alonso 5th, Grosjean 6th, Button 7th.
And really, Grosjean, hats off to him. He had to, not only did he have to deal with the drive-through penalty, but he did 4 stops because he got punted and ended up getting his, they were worried about the tire going down. So he had to do an extra stop, and he still ended up 6th. That is the drive of the race right there.
Well, and indeed, because he ended up with 2 drive-through penalties, 1 assessed after the race and 1 during the race, and 4 stops.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, wow. Impressive for him. Impressive.
Yes, very impressive.
Jay Button finished 7th, Massa 8th, Perez 9th, Pastor Maldonado securing Williams' first point of the year, finishing 10th. Notables, we had Nico Rosberg lose an engine and finish 6 laps down. Paul de Resta had hydraulic issues there towards the end. He was out. Retirements, Valtteri Bottas, Esteban Gutierrez, and Adrian Sutil. So fastest lap going to one Mark Webber, who set it on the 61st lap with a 1:24.069. So it was a better race than what we expected, I guess, but still kind of the same old Hungaroring stuff. But we'll see exactly what happens going forward. So let's go ahead and get into the news. We got some Formula One news this week. Michelin, yes, you heard right. Michelin is scheduled to make an announcement during the middle of the week, so probably tomorrow, maybe Thursday. This according to Auto Motor und Sport, saying that there potentially could be an interest in bidding for an F1 tender. So I don't know if this means I don't know if this is going to be for 2015 and potentially the end of Pirelli after 2014, or perhaps we could hopefully, and I'm hoping upon hope that we could see tire wars in 2015 between Pirelli and Michelin.
I approve.
And Bridgestone jumps back in.
Oh, yeah. I wish. But definitely, potentially.
Yeah. It is interesting that we've waited so long to hear about the tires for next year. Don't you think it is a bit ridiculous that, you know, Pirelli's out here basically months ago saying, we need to know and we need to know now. We need to be making these tires now for next season. And then we go on and on and they're making statements about we have contracts with FOM and we have contracts with the teams, and nothing's been said from the FIA, who is the one that makes the decision on this.
Yeah,
I really think Michelin's going to come out tomorrow and say we're the tire supplier next year.
Oh wow!
I would be surprised by that. I mean, Michelin, the FIA tire supplier. I mean,
the FIA whipping boy, right? A few years back. But you know, John Todd likes him.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're also looking at the Concord agreement too. That's another big deal. That has kind of been, I guess, lost over the course of the season, or perhaps just kind of coming up in circles here and there. But it looks like that the Concord agreement stalemate that had been happening between FOM and the FIA has kind of resolved itself, as they apparently have reached an agreement over its terms as of Saturday. So it looks as though we're finally going to get a Concord agreement on the table for the teams to sign. But here's the thing. that you have to read through the lines on this one. According to Racer is where I'm getting this particular phrase. Ecclestone already has bilateral agreements in place with 10 of F1's teams. 10. Mm-hmm. There's one that's missing, and that is Marussia.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to be missing from the grid.
I don't know. Marussia said that they will stay in the sport, and that Concord agreement or not, they're ready to race.
So did HRT.
Well, HRT, we knew. I think HRT was in a slightly different situation than that of Marussia, in the sense that that was just a really bad situation all around. Marussia is making strides. They kind of had an off weekend this weekend, but, you know, the car's shown pace for the back of the grid this year. So, I don't know. They're passionate about Formula One. I hope that they stick around, and I hope that a deal can be reached with them as well.
I wonder if Marussia's drivers are being paid or not, or, I don't know, people on the team are being paid, because apparently Sauber is still having issues with paying their team, and they have to wait for that Russian money to come through and their 17-year-old driver to come take a seat.
Yeah.
or who else? Kimi Raikkonen supposedly has not been paid for a while either, which is kind of an interesting thing. I guess there's a Infinity group that's buying into the team and they're waiting for that money to clear. So they're, you know, Marussia, yeah, they may be kind of at the bad end of Bernie Ecclestone's crumbling wit. But unfortunately, you know, we've got several teams that are in some pretty interesting financial situations right now, and it may not be Marussia that disappears.
Yeah.
They've been saying it for years. The budgets are just out of control in Formula One right now.
Yeah.
And something's got to be done about it.
When have budgets ever not been under control in Formula One? I mean, that's
look, part don't bring facts being into this perfectly good argument.
I mean, that's part and parcel with being the pinnacle of motorsport, is it not? Is you also have the pinnacle of budgets.
Yeah, true.
The only problem comes when the pinnacle of budgets exceeds the pinnacle of cash flow, and teams start ceasing to exist, and you have a circuit with a grid with 8 cars on it.
Well, so in other words, competitive anyway. Oh wait, never mind. That's what we have in Firestone Indy Lights.
That's what I was about to say. When Formula One becomes Indy Lights one day, we'll wish we did something.
All right. Well, looking at some other news that cropped up in the F1 world. The teams have decided that a 10 grid spot penalty will be issued to the team that has a loose wheel nut or a wheel come off the car, basically. Loose wheels will result in 10 grid spot penalty. This coming after, obviously, the huge impact to the face that a cameraman suffered at the hands of I believe it was Mark Webber's tire.
Yep.
Hit him in the face there. So they
hit him in the back of the head, and then
hit him in the back of the head.
He tried to assault the tarmac with his face, and the tarmac.
Yes. Tarmac won. So
look up track is the lesson. Anyone out there who's doing any kind of motorsport photography, I don't care if it's at your local solo event. Look up track. Always look in the direction of traffic. Never, ever, ever turn your back to traffic. Case in point right there.
Yeah.
I just remember that after, you know, the event that happened that took, Henry Surtees' life, and then Felipe Massa after that. I remember that Renault had a loose wheel nut, and at that time, the FIA penalized him like $100,000 and a bunch of championship points.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah, I
remember that.
Photographer.
Yeah, this guy's
like, it wasn't something like a driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Photographers don't matter.
Well, looking here also in the news, we have Ferrari has confirmed that James Allison is in fact going to be on the team starting the 1st of September as the chassis technical director. You may remember James Allison from such films as Lotus. Technical director for said team. So fantastic mind behind James Allison. He will now be sent to Ferrari to help with perhaps the long-term development of Ferrari, but will probably have minimal impact on the short term, which is actually what Ferrari needs the most help on.
The Alonso retainment operation?
Yes, we'll get to that in a second. But looking ahead, well, actually, we can talk about that now. There's a lot of stuff in the driver market this offseason that's coming out and being made public. Obviously, Mark Webber is retiring and moving on to Porsche sports car. So we will have a new driver in at Red Bull. The names that have been on that list have been Kimi Raikkonen is the fan favorite, and Daniel Ricciardo is a reasonable favorite given his performance in testing and his performance in STR.
Daniel Ricciardo is the what's actually going to happen.
Perhaps until this week when everything got turned on its head, because it now appears as though Fernando Alonso is becoming quite, it appears, now granted this is all rumor, we're not in the Ferrari paddock, but it appears as though the Ferrari driver is going to be, or may try to be angling himself for a move to Red Bull.
Didn't he get enough of that at McLaren?
Perhaps.
You know, and here's why I fully agree with Mr. Neely that Ricciardo is the one we're likely to see at Red Bull. Red Bull is vested in having Vettel as their number one driver, and why wouldn't they?
Yes.
Right?
And especially if Vettel signed that 1 year contract, the last thing you want to do is give him reason to think it was a good decision to sign a 1 year contract.
Right. And you know, Kimi didn't want to play number two to anybody, and neither does Alonso. And so you know, you put one of those two in with a talent like Vettel. You're just
That sounds like Sebastian Ogier and Sebastian Loeb of, oh, they're both number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Go
right?
Yeah, sure. That'll work out real well for you.
Yep. You know, Prost, Senna, Hamilton, Alonso. You know, we've seen this movie before. We know how it ends. It ends poorly for the team, right? It ends very poorly. So,
and that,
Fernando,
well,
do you understand that Sebastian is faster than you?
Well, that's why I.
How'd
well,
you
that's
say
what
piss I. Off in Italian.
I don't understand how after Fernando moved to Red Bull, he can't start races very well. It seems like his car goes backwards on the grid every time.
And this is one of the things that I was mentioning, though. Okay, so say you don't want Alonso in your car because you're going to cause some strife within the team. But that's something that Red Bull has to weigh. Because what happens, you have to look at it from the strategic standpoint of, okay, we bring in Alonso. We may have some problems with team chemistry. In fact, we're going to probably have issues with team chemistry. However, Ferrari is no longer a title contender without Alonso.
Oh yeah.
The only team that would stand a chance in hell of challenging for the championship may be Mercedes. Maybe.
Yep.
So, I don't know. That's something that Red Bull has to weigh. Do you really want to be the team that wins the manufacturers championship? Because you will if you have those guys, but be prepared to have even more media surrounding your hospitality area than you did before. Or do you allow Alonso to move, or does Alonso stay at Ferrari and then you have to deal with Ferrari? You'll still have to deal with Ferrari, because I can assure you that there is no driver on the market, Nico Hülkenberg or whomever, that if they go to Ferrari will not be challenging for championships. They will not. They will be challenging for third, maybe fourth on in the Constructors' Championship without a quality driver like that, because then you're looking at, what, does Kimi Raikkonen go back to Ferrari? No way in hell does that happen. They are way too robotic for Kimi's taste.
Yeah, let's call this.
Whoa. Oh, that's funny right there. That's good.
Well, because if you see Kimi outside of the racetrack, he's not like he is when he's at the racetrack.
Okay,
when he's
that's
at the
true.
Racetrack,
that's
true. He's a different person. He's robotic. But when he's outside or doing sponsorship stuff, he's not that way. And
he wears a gorilla suit.
Yeah, parties his ass off, which is frowned upon in the Maranello establishment. So, so you know, I don't think that he would much care to be a part of that again.
Let's call this exactly what it is, gentlemen. This is what was it? Foreigner on their third album. There was a song, something like Head Games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, that's exactly what this is. And I don't know which way it's going, but Red Bull is running with it because it's Head Games against Ferrari. And I really think that this comes down to a couple of different things. This comes down to Alonso making a desperate attempt to get his team to not suck. And I don't know if it's going to work very well, because the last time he tried to do it, they kicked him off the team, basically.
You know, I listened to the comments that he had, and I didn't find anything that was disrespectful or, oh my God, these guys suck, I want away from him so much.
No, he's just frustrated with the car.
Yeah, he is, but he didn't say anything that wasn't straight up factual. And, you know, he included himself in, you know, that we need to work through this. And so I thought what he said was right on the money, and that Luca's reaction was a little, seemed a little knee-jerkish.
Luca may be using it in his own way. You know, he made the comment to the team that he gave everybody on the team a knife. And he told them that they need to put it between their teeth as they work hard to get these problems resolved, or something like that. I don't know exactly where that...
Typical Luca bravado.
Yeah, and that's it. Maybe he's using some of these comments by Alonso to really stir the team and make them realize, hey, this star driver, this guy, I really is once-in-a-lifetime type of guy, or once-in-a-generation type of guy, except, you know, Vettel is one of those too.
Three of them on the grid right now, right?
You've got to get a good car around him, and you guys have to do whatever you can to get that car around him, because while he's contracted with Ferrari, we don't know if there are any performance clauses in his contract where he can opt out if Ferrari sucks. The other thing we don't know is how desperate Alonso is. And, you know, there have been cases, and I pointed this out to you, Sean, today in email, there have been cases in the past of people who are just dispirited and annoyed with their current situation because they couldn't win and their team wouldn't release them, and thus Barry Sanders retired.
Yeah, early.
Do you really think that Alonso would have signed a contract that did not have a performance clause in it?
I think he probably did.
It depends how badly he wanted to be at Ferrari. Really depends.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what goes on with Ferrari. Lots to monitor over the coming weeks as the driver market heats up.
One thing to point out, the driver market heats up, and suddenly we've got this story that carries us on into this long break. How much of this is just the media playing it up to make something to talk about when F1 is completely off the radar for the next few weeks?
True, true. Let's see. 2014 schedule has just come out. Has not come out, but is being discussed.
Yes.
Being discussed. So my bad. A little quick there. One of the biggest things on there is that there will be no Indian Grand Prix in 2014. Mm. I know many people are thinking doom and gloom. Why did we have a track in India? Blah, blah, blah. Well, that's actually not the problem. The track in India is great, and the attendance is pretty good, all things considered. But it stems from the fact, some will say that it stems from the fact that the track is having a hard time with taxes. I would say
it stems from the fact that there's too much graft and corruption in the Indian economy surrounding the race, and the teams are livid about it.
Yeah, that's a really big point to be made. Basically, Bernie says that, of course, we take what he says with a grain of salt. But,
speaking of graft and corruption.
Yeah, exactly. Bernie says that the Indian Grand Prix organizers basically want the event to occur earlier in the season with the other flyaway races. However, at first they wanted it in the fall. Now the race is in October. It's not working out so well for them, and they would like to move to the original March schedule that was originally proposed to them. So that's one of the things that they were talking about. But it's probably not going to they're talking 2015. It could come back onto the schedule. We'll see. I think the track itself is phenomenal.
It is.
Lots of great infrastructure there for Formula One teams, but just some sketchiness going on right now over there, and kind of hard to figure out who to believe. And then also there's news that Korea could be off the schedule, which I think a lot of us would applaud, because that race frankly sucks. So, you know, not having it is not a huge deal. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen because it's just not that great. And they're
out in the Commerce Park that never was.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we've said before, they built that track as far away from the DMZ as they possibly could and hoped that a city would spring up around it.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. It didn't even remotely work out to what they kind of had planned. But the sad fact is nobody wants to go there. People don't want to visit the track. People don't want to fly to the track. They don't want to spend their money to go visit the track. The teams don't want to be at the track because there's nothing there. They complained about going to Manicure out in the middle of nowhere with no hospitality and all that kind of stuff. This is worse.
Yeah.
At least Manicure was in the French Alps.
Exactly.
Yeah, true.
Exactly. It at least was close to some pleasant things.
It was picturesque, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, looking also on the calendar, the Grand Prix of America, apparently, if you are to believe what Niki Lauda has to say, is also in jeopardy and has in fact been taken off the schedule because of lack of funding here in America. So
yeah.
I have not heard one way or the other if that's the case, but according to Niki Lauda, it will not be on the calendar.
Yeah, Lauda said it's already been dropped, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all because it has been cricket silent out of the New Jersey area of late. I'm kind of surprised that we haven't heard more about this because this is a big deal. This is something that Bernie desperately wants, and there have been a lot of rumors coming out the past week that everything is off. This is a big deal, though, for the teams. This is a big deal for Bernie, and it's going to be a big blow if it is dropped.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I remember their talk being at one point in time when a lot of people thought that New Jersey was the lock to happen and that Austin wouldn't.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Well, and
the difference is Austin has public money and New Jersey is supposedly entirely private.
Well, and that's why we thought that Austin wasn't going to happen because of the, as we well know, the, you
the
know,
lawsuits and...
Well, yeah, you have the lawsuits, but anytime you have public money involved, you are beholden to the election cycle.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
And so, you know, to be honest, I really was surprised to see Austin take off as well as it did. And, you know, even if the public money were to drop now, I think Austin has positioned themselves as such a great facility and motorsports venue that they would survive. You know, I know that Bernie wants to have that iconic Manhattan skyline in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I have to admit, you know, the whole New Jersey deal always seemed a little sketch. Of course, it's Jersey, isn't it? And anything in Jersey seems a little sketch to me.
But... Oh, no. Hey, what are you doing? Yeah. So, yeah, little mafioso New Jersey.
Snooki
so
is lots the of... Grand Marshal.
Nice.
Yeah, the product advertising in New Jersey usually revolves around somebody paying Snooki not to carry their purse.
Nice. Impressive. I like it.
Anyway, the thing that has to be, you know, talked about now is we've got 19 races on the calendar this season. Bernie says they want to go to 20 next year. 22 was a possibility, he said, if all races returned. And we added, you know, well, I don't know about 22, but 22 was what he was kind of gunning for. And I think 21 are a possibility if all races return. You add Russia, you add New Jersey. Okay, so you're up to 21. Well, we're in a situation just to get to 20 where one of these three has to happen. We know that the Indian Grand Prix is gone, so we're down to 18. Korea and New Jersey, Indian Grand Prix's gone, Russia's in, so we're at 19 still. If Korea's dropped, we're down to 18. If New Jersey's dropped, we're waiting to see if New Jersey's added to go to 19 again. You know, this is
Are you including Austria?
Austria, no, I'm not. I did not include Austria. A lot of people are saying that Austria is coming on to replace. Yeah, that's it. There's the 22. Thank you. Austria would be coming on to replace New Jersey as they were originally proposed to do for this season. Ah, what fun. But that brings us to the world of F1, and maybe we should talk a little IndyCar.
Yeah, let's talk about some IndyCar then. Neely?
Yeah.
Your turn.
Go!
Hey, how y'all doing? IndyCar is a series that races primarily in the United States.
It's like football.
They cover a football field a second. They can run upside down if the track were inverted. And there's so much
what
number.
A terrible.
And most infomercials get better ratings.
I know. I started to say, what are you doing?
I do want to say, Mr. Neely, that I like the segment that you started this week. Today marked the first what I'm hoping will be a regular thing of Tuesday Talk for IndyCar, reviewing all the latest rumors and scuttlebutt and news in the world of IndyCar. Your article today was brilliant, sir.
Of course it was, because I wrote it.
Oh, my God.
And you're so humble.
I am. I'm the most humble person you will ever meet in your life. I really am.
And I'm Michael Schumacher.
Hey, Michael.
Not on Sunday, you weren't.
Oh!
I am sorry, sir. He was I could not resist.
He was a Schumacher.
Just going to softball it in there.
That was epic.
He was a Schumacher, but unfortunately it was Ralph.
I mounted no cars.
Yeah, I was about to say, he didn't mount any of the cars.
He left three wheels on the ground, unlike Ralph.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say I was the Michael Schumacher from Mercedes. So
there you go.
Not the Ferrari Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, see, our IndyCar top of the list here. I see on the show notes is Tony Kanaan back at IMS, maybe on a job interview for Ganassi. You know, that was the Grand Am race at the Brickyard, which is honestly a pretty good race if anybody paid any attention to it.
I had it going in the background while I was watching Lillian, and I thought it was a fine race. You know, like I said last week, that infield road course, it might not have the iconic turns that, you know, some other natural terrain road courses have, but doggone it puts on good racing.
Especially for those Grand Am cars.
Yeah.
And as we discussed last week, it actually is a natural terrain road course because
is.
Indiana is flat.
At least central Indiana.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's been rumors of Tony Kanaan being up for that fourth car at Ganassi. Other names I've heard involved in that are Justin Wilson and Sebastian Bourdais.
No.
There's somebody else. somebody said Ryan Briscoe.
Hildebrand?
No. Hinchcliffe is another one. No, I haven't heard Hildebrand, actually.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said in the article, that so long as the Go Money, or GoDaddy Money, Go Money. So long as the GoDaddy Money is there backing Hinchcliffe, you know, I think that his position at Andretti is just too good. I don't know why he would.
I would agree.
Yeah, he just meshes so well with that crowd at Andretti, and I don't see him as being the type of driver that can thrive at Ganassi. Charlie Kimball is.
Yeah.
Charlie Kimball is absolutely the kind of driver that can thrive at a place like Ganassi, because he's okay with a higher amount of structure, you know, and having to be more of a corporate type. Those drivers tend to do well at places like Penske as well. AJ Allmendinger was another one I'd heard for that seat. But I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty sure AJ is headed back to NASCAR. So,
yeah, it seems such.
Yeah. Panther. Oh, Lord. Panther is a freaking train wreck.
Oh, what a joke.
They bet.
Are you about to talk about their road racing considerations?
Hey, we've been talking for like 20 years that we're going to run a second car in the IndyCar series, but now we're going to run a car in Grand Am. No way. Now we're going to do a stadium super truck. No way. Now we're going to join the Tour de France. I mean, it's like...
Road racing's not their thing. I don't even think they could do it on bikes.
They could take it up to Major Taylor Velodrome and see if it works.
I think it's safe to say that just about any IndyCar team right now is looking at United Sports Car Racing with an eye towards giving their team something to do in the off season, making it a more permanent job that they can have year round. Just giving more diversity to their organizations if they can swing it, if they can get the sponsorship. And I don't know. I think it's a safe bet that everybody's looking, not just Panther. And
it's really not a bad notion. You know, think about the heyday of the American Le Mans series when the P2 cars, especially on the street courses, were competitive with the Audi LMP1s, and you had Andretti and Penske with very good and successful and supportable programs. And, you know, I can completely see a good IndyCar team also fielding a good sports car team, you know, especially in this unified sports car series.
Well, you know, any team
is not one of the teams I would have chosen for that.
No, not at all. Especially when, you know, John has been the subject of lawsuits and everything for pay and what have you.
I guess their intentions on doing this are actually none of our damn business. So.
Nothing that Barnes does is any of our damn business, apparently.
Yeah.
Lucas Lure is going to make his IndyCar debut at Sonoma for Sarah Fisher, Hartman, Rodham, Clinton, Kennedy, Onassis Racing.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that I have a question for you, Mr. Neely. Is that a full Sarah Fisher Hartman endeavor, or is that Sarah Fisher lending some expertise and equipment to the Pickett Racing crew?
It is listed as a Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing entry.
Well,
I would honestly,
at, but in the
not, let me finish. Let
okay,
me finish.
Okay.
But if I were putting money on it, I would guess that it's actually the Pickett team running the show, so to speak, with direction from Sarah Fisher Racing, because honestly, I don't see where Sarah has the crew for a second pit crew laying around anywhere.
Well, that was my thought when I read that in your article. It's like, had we heard of Fisher's organization even thinking about a second car outside of Indianapolis anywhere else?
No, in fact, Sarah said, you know, it's not even possible.
Okay.
That the earliest they could do it would be 2014. And the common line of thought here is Pickett's using it as kind of an audition to see if their guys are interested in doing IndyCar.
Well, yeah, because they're doing LMP1 with their Muscle Milk Porsche, right?
Yep, and the budget for an LMP1 car is roughly the same as an IndyCar.
Mm. And LMP1 is going away as a class in the Unified program, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep, and to bridge into our second topic here, the guys at Dyson Racing, you know, had come out and said that they have absolutely no interest in doing a Daytona prototype program. Mm. So that kind of leaves them up in the air. And they've also been a team that has been rumored to go to IndyCar in the past. So you've got Muscle Milk and possibly Dyson looking at doing IndyCar programs. If you're looking at your LMP1 programs, Audi is up there. Audi's expressed interest in doing Grand Am. Then you've got Rebellion as well. And I haven't heard jack poop out of them. So
yeah, it sounds like this weekend is not just Lucas Lure coming to drive a car because he wants to. I think this is just kind of what you're saying. This is a chance to do kind of a show and tell for Muscle Milk and say, this is what we could do for you in IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They've got to get their sponsor interested if they want to go into IndyCar, because that money's only there because of Muscle Milk.
Well, you know why Muscle Milk is there, don't you?
No.
Pickett owns Muscle Milk.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Nope. Cytomax Corporation.
No way. That's so, like, cool. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was channeling my inner Candy Crush player.
Yes. I'll have you know that while doing the show, I've increased another 3 levels.
Oh, my goodness.
Your band card will be relinquished when we get to Mid-Ohio, sir.
It's an epidemic, damn it. Don't judge me.
I guess I shouldn't admit that I'm playing Bubble Witch Saga.
Haha! See, he's worse than me. At least other guys play Candy Crush. Nobody plays that shit.
Anyways,
continue. Continue.
Do we have to?
Yeah, sadly.
So IndyCar came out and they have mandated twin turbo engines for 2014.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Much to the chagrin of Honda, who also announced that their plan was to go to a twin turbo anyway.
You know, at this point, I've seen a lot of people making a fuss about this, but honestly, this would be like IndyCar coming out and saying, we mandate that all cars must have four wheels.
Well, yes and no, because, the last couple of years, they were talking about it could be a four, it could be a six, it could be a twin, it could be a single. We could do all kinds of things, and basically it depends what the engine manufacturer who came to us said they wanted to do, then we would make rules for it.
And the two engine manufacturers that have came to them and said they want to do it have both now said, we want to do a six-cylinder engine and we both want to do a twin turbo.
Yep.
So why do you need a regulation?
I'm sure if someone – it's to prevent the turbo gate like we had last year.
It's to prevent anybody coming in with an engine that's slightly different and beating the pants off the sixes with twin turbos.
No, see, and that's wrong. Yeah, that's just straight up wrong. That goes against the
goes against innovation and all the science and technology where you're trying to learn and
things forward. Leave it open. If the twin turbo V6 is working, and manufacturers are gravitating towards that, fine. But you know, don't limit somebody else from coming up with a better idea.
Well, I'm sure if, like, say Audi wants to go IndyCar racing and they came to IndyCar and said, we want to run an inline four twin turbo and we would like to develop some regulations for that. I'm pretty sure they would sit down with Ilmor and they'd sit down with HPD and say, okay, we need to hammer out some regulations to do this.
Yeah, well, let's hope that that's their response.
If you don't need the regulations, why do you have them?
Well, that was my question. You know, if manufacturers are already moving in that direction, why do you need something in the rules that restricts future involvement?
In this case, the constant thing I've heard is it's a homologation issue, and it has to do with last year at Indianapolis when Honda miraculously comes up with this new turbo configuration and absolutely dominates, and the Ford teams cry foul, or the Ford. The Chevy teams, I'm sorry, I'm going to hell for that.
Yeah, sure.
And amongst other things. The Chevy teams cry foul, and IndyCar has got this whole big herp derp about turbochargers on their hands.
Did you just say herp derp?
I did, sir.
I like it.
Is that the same as your girlfriend, Derpina?
Hey, hey, don't make fun of Derpina, okay? I'm eating my Derpios right now.
Bad Rage Comics. Yeah. Awesome.
Long story short, I'm right.
Nice.
Middle-Ohio preview. Here we go.
Sorry. Last comment on that. You know, tongue firmly planted in cheek, like I did in response to the article you put up on the website. In 2015, IndyCar is mandating the use of an Ilmor six-cylinder twin-turbo engine, and everybody has to use the Ilmor engine. IndyCar made this move to make sure that the manufacturers didn't have to develop anything and didn't have to spend unnecessary money, except only on stickers.
Right.
Stickers.
Right.
Valve covers are expensive.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I read that, you know, IndyCar has mandated, and I remember those comments from a couple years ago being, it's wide open, bring what you want, four or six, but we'll have to make rules for it if you bring a four.
This was also during...
And now it's too hard to make rules that homologate everything, so it will be a six, and it will be a twin turbo because, yeah... And the manufacturer said we could do that.
Making rules is hard.
Yeah. It's
kind of like you can have any color you want as long as it's black.
Yeah. Yes, you can have any color you want as long as it's black.
I'm glad Walker is firmly placed in IndyCar leadership and management now so that he could make this earth-shattering rule change.
Mid-Ohio preview, Acura NSX hybrid supercar to make on-track debut at Mid-Ohio. Okay.
That's a killer looking car.
Sure there's room on my camera for this.
Yeah, you know, better.
And there better be Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno in a flying squirrel suit to go along with it. Because if you remember, that was their Super Bowl commercial a year and a half ago.
I concur.
Promoting this NSX hybrid that is going to be debuting in the fall.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
still
excited.
A gas looking car.
Yeah, that car looks amazing.
Yeah, so looking forward to that one.
Let's see what else we got here. Ryan Briscoe to miss the IndyCar race in Mid-Ohio because he broke his wrist.
Yeah, and I will say I'm still kind of annoyed about this whole thing because it was because of the stupid two-wheel rule that was rescinded that put Ryan Briscoe in the wall anyway. Mm-hmm. And I still have not heard why Bo Barfield was not at the race other than he had an immigration issue.
I told you, duty party's too hard in Canada.
Immigration irregularities.
Irregularities? You look Mexican. No.
Nice.
Denied.
As I
Were
told you the other week.
Stay?
As I told you all the other week, his hair is too awesome to get into Canada.
There you go.
Wow.
Let's see. Well, that means with Briscoe being out, that means Oriel Servia is in at Panther. Congratulations with a question mark.
I feel sorry for Oriel.
Hey, that's your boy, right?
Yeah, I started to say, at least you get to see your favorite driver on track.
That's true. I like Oriel quite a bit, but I wish the circumstances were better.
I also like to point out that I know for a fact that Oriel Servia show up to Target.
Playing for the ride. Playing for
because at the open test at Barber this spring, he was wearing a T-shirt that I had purchased for myself at Target, actually.
Oh, wow.
So,
very nice.
It was a Corvette T-shirt. It was pretty awesome. So with Servia in the car, that means we've got some open seats, and one of them is being filled at Dale Coyne by Mr. James Davison, who I've also met at Barber in the past, back when he was in Indy Lights. Driving for someone.
Well, now, James, let's hope that this time he remembers that the checkered flag is the flag that ends the race, not the white flag. Because the memory I will always have of Mr. Davidson, especially at Mid-Ohio, is him leading the race and under yellow. Help me out here, Mike. Wasn't
yes,
it under
it
yellow?
Yes, it was under yellow.
He's like, woo, I'm going to win the race. And he pulls into the pit. As they're coming to accept the checkers, he thought the race was over when they threw the yellow-white flag, and he pulls in the pits, and it seems like, what the hell are you doing, son? And he lost. I forget who the winner of that race was. I just remember that that botched move by Davidson. He's a great driver, don't get me wrong. I'm kind of surprised, that mistake notwithstanding, I'm kind of surprised that he didn't stay around in the Indy Lights series. But anyway, it is good to see that he's going to have an IndyCar ride. All joking aside.
Yeah.
And also, if you go look at the official entry list on the IndyCar media website right now, the number 98 is left as our favorite driver, Mr. TBA, is in the seat.
Oh, I love that guy.
He's easily the most underrated driver in the paddock.
All right.
This TBA guy. He's underrated, man.
TBA has had some really good starts, but he always fails to finish.
Ugh. And welcome to the lame comedy hour.
Oh, dear God.
Okay, moving on. Doug, it's your time to shine.
All right.
Yeah, Doug, go, Doug.
Well, first of all, I want to give a little bit of a promotion. I had the great honor and privilege of speaking with Mr. Matthew Brabham, Matty Brabs, earlier
Matty Brabs.
This week, and we had a great conversation. I shouldn't call it a conversation. I asked a couple of questions, pointed him in a direction, said go, and it was great just to sit back and listen to him tell his story about coming up through karts and then Formula Ford. In Australia there, and then moving into the Mazda Road to Indy, and the decision that he faced whether to go to Europe and follow that line, you know, seeking a Formula One ride, following in his grandfather's footsteps, or coming to the Mazda Road to Indy program. Anyway, he of course last year landed at Cape Motorsports, Dwayne Taylor Racing in USF 2000, the dominant team last year. In a strong team this year, of course, as well. Arguably the best team in USF 2000 right now, and took the championship with a hard-fought battle with Spencer Pigot, and he had some great things to say about that, and about racing here in the States versus what he was likely to face there in Europe. And then we had a nice little discussion of what was going on this year in the Pro Mazda Championship, as he's absolutely destroying the series this year, just demolishing it. He had his plans for moving forward, going to the looking for a position in the Firestone Indy Lights in 2014. So if you get a chance, go to the website, look for our latest Inside the Helmet episode with Andretti Autosports, Matthew Brabham. It's a great listen. Don't pay attention to my voice at all. You can mute me. Just listen to Matty Brabs. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff. It was very enjoyable. But anyway, so this weekend we have the full Mazda Road to Indy back together again. All three rungs of the Mazda Road to Indy ladder are going to be represented there at Mid-Ohio. The USF 2000 series is going to run three events. That's right. It's going to be a triple header for the young kids in USF 2000. Should be brilliant. The Pro Mazda series, this is their first time at Mid-Ohio in a long, long while. So it'll be good to see them back at this roller coaster of a circuit. And I know Brabham is really looking for some redemption. He and Pickett had a wretched race number two last year. And Mike, you will probably remember this. It had rained that morning. It didn't rain during the race, but the track was still really, really damp. The track was just super, super. And they ended up finishing deep in the 20-somethings after some initial argy-bargy early in the race. So he's definitely looking to for some retribution there, as is Spencer Pigot, who won one of last week's races at Mosport. Shelby Blackstock, also a first-time winner in Pro Mazda at Mosport last time. He's going to look to carry that momentum forward at Mid-Ohio. So this will be a really, really interesting event for the Pro Mazda series. Now, Matthew Brabham still has a strong lead. I think 51 points, if I remember right, in the championship. So even if he has one bad race, he's still pretty safe, but he really can't afford to have two bad races. And it really looks like the competition is closing the gap to his pace. So it'll be interesting to see what this weekend brings. The Firestone Indy Lights guys are only going to be running one race this weekend, and Carlos Munoz continues to lead the way. This is a type of circuit that Peter Dempsey and Ballardi Auto Racing really enjoy. This is his type of circuit. And also, you know, I have to say that Jack Hawksworth, who's out of his funk after that he got into there at beginning at Long Beach, then continuing for the next several races. He seems to be back up in the saddle and strong. So I think we could see a good battle there. This will be a great, great weekend to follow along the Mazda Road to Indy guys. USF 2000.
Okay, I gotta dive in real quick and say that there's been some rumor and some scuttlebutt from Hawks people saying that he's going to be in an IndyCar ride next year. Please. He needs another year of LOTS.
I agree. And it's not because he's not a fast driver. He is. He absolutely is lightning quick. There's some mental things, some racecraft things that I'd really like to see Hawksworth iron out first before he goes into the IndyCar series. But I mean, this is a common theme with lights drivers, right? All too often we've seen drivers do a year of lights, say, okay, I'm ready, let's go, let's do IndyCar, and they kind of suck at it, right? And mad props to Sebastian Saavedra, who did a year in IndyCar. Who was it with? Coin, I think.
He was with Conquest.
It didn't go so well, right? And he stepped back and did another year of lights. And although his race results haven't been what he had hoped for them to be this year, I will say his racecraft has really improved remarkably. I think he's a better
His racing has been far better than the results.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree, and I think that extra year in lights really, really helped him out. A couple years ago, I got to, this was back when we still had the Downforce fan club. I got the privilege of taking a shop tour at Schmidt Motorsports. And one of the comments that one of the mechanics or engineers that was leading our tour had mentioned, and he called out a few drivers. I won't mention them by name. But he called out a few drivers that he said the team had really wished had come back to them instead of trying to move forward. And and just exactly what you're talking about, Kevin, and in that you don't want to move up prematurely and then suck, because well then you're shot, right? You know, what do you do then? People will then look at you and say, well, no, you tried it and you sucked at it, kid. Go away. As opposed to, okay, invest another year in lights, improve your racecraft, improve your dynamics, your mental game, and then move up with a better program, a better team, and a better head for the sport, and have more success. Not necessarily go out and then win the championship, but go out and race better and show the various team owners that, no, you really do have what it takes to be successful in this sport. So, yeah, I agree. I don't want to see Hawksworth move up to the IndyCar series just yet. As quick as I think he is, I would really like to see him spend another year with Schmidt Peters Motorsport.
Thank you.
You're welcome. anyway, speaking of Indy Lights, of course, we heard over the Toronto weekend that Anderson Promotions was going to take over the leadership and direction of the Firestone Indy Lights series. Not that Anderson was buying out the Indy Lights series like they did with Pro Mazda, but they were going to have basically the final word, right, in where the series goes, that they were going to lead the series forward and lay out its direction and such. And this past week they came out with a release, and I must admit, when he came out with that release, I was super excited. I'm like, all right, this is gonna be awesome, and I was fully prepped to sit there and take a day or two to really digest it. And really think carefully about what he said, what it meant, what it implied, and I did so, and I read, and I'm like, okay, don't jump to conclusions, let's think about this carefully. But there really wasn't anything in that announcement that we didn't already know, that we didn't know from some of his comments in the official release and his on-air comments during the Toronto broadcast. Did you see anything new, Mr. Neely?
No, I haven't heard anything new, but I have heard that the number of teams next year may significantly increase.
Oh, yeah, and that was something that, again, from the Toronto weekend, we knew there were a lot. Well, we know that there are a lot of team owners out there who are interested in running Indy Lights, if it's run properly, if the business model makes sense. Of course, Sean, you have a nice connection with Jubilee Motorsports and Rick Moss, and yeah, they were looking at running lights this year when we thought we were going to get a brand new chassis for 2014. Until that went Tango Uniform. And they backed out for this year with planning on running two cars, I believe. And they backed out, saying that, you know, with the lack of a new chassis that went contrary to the business model that they'd put together, and they were out. And so with some of the things that Anderson was saying, and he had a meeting in Toronto with the current team owners, all four of them, and also a whole host of prospective team owners. And we're looking at maybe at least time and a half, if not potentially double the amount of teams for next year if things really go well. What we're looking at for next year is some changes to the current chassis. And I really like Anderson's thinking on this, in that the changes he wants to make for next year are changes that will carry forward to the new chassis that's to debut in 2015. So the investment that teams make in new equipment for 2014 won't be just a one-year write-off, that they'll be able to use that and move forward in 2015 when the new Indy Lights chassis comes online. But the first and foremost, they're looking at really modernizing some of the technology in the Indy Lights cars, and also looking at a new engine and tire partner. And Mr. Shaw, I think you mentioned rather obliquely last week that it was going to be Cooper. And how can one argue with that, right? Cooper has a great relationship with Anderson Promotion. They are already the tire manufacturer, exclusive tire manufacturer for USF 2000, as well as now the Pro Mazda series. They also, if I remember right, they're also the tire provider for the IMSA lights, prototype lights, that follows the ALMS series around. And so I think that we could see Cooper Tires come in and replace Firestone. Firestone really isn't real keen on the Indy Lights program.
I just want to throw some melts in there. Actually, it's something I thought I'd ran across, and Cooper Tire, just thinking about them, they actually are the new tire provider for the European Rallycross Championship.
Mm.
So the cool. Cooper Tire of Europe, but still talking about them getting around
as long as
now.
It's not, as long as it's not Kuma, we're okay.
What, you don't like road noise? But anyway, so there was, it wasn't for this season, but last season, I think, or season before, that we had that nervous time when Firestone was making noise about removing their support from IndyCar, all of it, right? And they agreed begrudgingly to stay on board if all the teams paid double what they were paying previously.
They agreed begrudgingly as they held all of IndyCar over a barrel and had their way with it.
Yes. Squeal like a pig. Yeah. You know, it really was pretty much a let's see how much money we can squeeze out of these chumps. You know, the Indy Light series doesn't hold much value for Firestone, and I think they'd be glad to be rid of it. But for Cooper, especially when you package it with USF 2000 and Pro Mazda, you know, now they're able to promote themselves as the exclusive tire manufacturer for the Mazda Road to Indy. You know, all three rungs of it, and you know, no, they don't use the same tire. You know, they are three separate specifications. However, even though there may not be economy in scale in terms of the manufacturing, there is economy in scale in the marketing aspect of this. And so I fully expect to see Cooper Tires on board for 2014. And Anderson also mentioned they're looking for a new engine partner. And right now we've been using an ancient
Speedway Motorsports.
Well, you know, it's not the engine builder that's the issue.
The fact that it's an old Infiniti engine.
Exactly. I mean, it's in terms of motorsports, it is an ancient and archaic platform. Right. This was a platform that was brought in when the series was the Menards Infiniti Pro Series back in 2002. Nissan's luxury brand Infiniti had badged a 3.5 liter V8, naturally aspirated, which matched the IndyCar engines at the time quite well, which were the V8 naturally aspirated engines. But now that we've gone to the smaller displacement turbocharged engines, this huge displacement V8, and you know, here I am saying 3.5 liter is displacement, but in Formula Motorsports it is, right? It just doesn't make sense. And so I can easily see Mazda with their Skyactiv petrol engine, the Skyactiv G, coming in with a package to run in Indy Lights, because you already have Mazda as the engine manufacturer or engine marketer, I should say, for USF 2000 and for Pro Mazda. Having them come in and also do the Indy Lights with their Skyactiv, I think, is really a no-brainer. Again, you get the economy of scale from a marketing perspective. They've been really pushing the Skyactiv technology, you know, the high compression direct injection engines that they're bringing to Grand Am in the Skyactiv diesel program. By the way, that was pretty cool. Speaking of Grand Am, at Indianapolis, it was the return of diesel power to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That was very cool. And if I remember right, didn't they win the GTX class?
Yes, I did overhear that. Yeah, they've actually been doing quite the comeback. The season started out crappy, but they've been doing very, very well the second half.
So. I think bringing the Skyactiv G, the petrol, the gasoline fueled Skyactiv platform to Indy Lights would be a no brainer in my opinion. And that would be a platform that they could easily say to the chassis manufacturers as they resubmit their bids. Of course, we went through this once before, right? With the various manufacturers submitting bids for a 2014 chassis. I think they could go and say, hey, you know, look at your proposals, but be thinking about your proposals in the light of having these tires and this engine with these other technical bits that we're going to be bringing in 2014 and resubmit your plans for 2015. The advantage to this is that you don't have to have a lot of retooling for the teams in engine maintenance or anything like that. It minimizes the costs as you transfer from one chassis platform to the next. Because you know, when you change platforms like that, it is necessarily going to require an outlay of capital for the involved teams, right? And Anderson's notion is to try to minimize that and then really lower the ongoing operation costs in the future. So I'm really excited about the direction of Indy Lights. I'm much more excited now than I ever have been in recent years. I think we're going to see some strong growth in the series. I think next year we'll see mid-teens, and I think 2015 we'll be looking at potentially 20-plus cars on grid again. I think that would be really fantastic. Crickets. You're all supposed to go, yay, yeah, you're right, right on. Go ahead.
No, you know, I guess too much of that, don't want to count chickens before they're hatched, but I mean, it does look all good. And of course, Anderson is the one to do it if it's going to happen. So, like you're saying, it takes a new car to bring in a lot of these people that were on the edge and haven't committed. And now they're starting that process. You know, yeah, let's look ahead for things to improve, and getting an engine that doesn't require the constant time between overhauls that was just ridiculous with the current engine they got and whatnot. So, no,
so
I think
that was a problem that Anderson fixed right away in Pro Mazda was a huge number of engine overhauls that were required for a season, right? So I fully expect him to fix that in Indy Lights as well.
I mean, I can think of one Lights team that will 90% be back on the grid for next year anyway. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's Dan Anderson taking it over, and he's promised to do these engine overhaul changes.
Well, Schmidt isn't going anywhere. He owns that series from a championship standpoint. Andretti isn't going
anywhere.
No, it's
anywhere not Schmidt.
Because they are deeply invested in the entire Mazda Road to Indy program. You know, Bilardi has a solid program in Lights. They're not going anywhere. The Moors, I really hope the Team Moore comes back. They are a fantastic team. I know this hasn't been their greatest year. But Junco's Racing had a little foray last year in Lights. And they've always been a strong team in Star Mazda. And I saw a little blurb from JP Horto that he was really looking forward to being back in Indy Lights next year. So I'm thinking, hey, is Junco's Racing going to make a reappearance? But who are you?
It is not Junco's that I speak of. I promised I wouldn't. I'm kind of sworn to secrecy on it.
Oh, so you bring it up, you tease us, and then you go, no, I'm not going to tell you.
Well, with that note, it's time to move on to other things. But one thing we do have to bring up quickly before we abandon the whole IndyCar, Mazda Road to Indy, and Mid-Ohio weekend coming up is this weekend I get to see World Challenge. We all get to see World Challenge,
Oh
my goodness, that's a good series. I was watching the broadcast of the Lime Rock race over the weekend.
Wasn't that fantastic?
That was great. And I'll tell you, I had heard about the Mercedes SLS coming in, the Gullwing, but it was sweet to see that car. They've got a Lotus out there. You know, you throw that in with the Nissan Zs and the Camaros and Corvettes and the Cadillacs. And oh my goodness, it's a fantastic series. We get to see four races this weekend. Two of the races are Touring Car A, Touring Car and Touring Car B. And then two of the races are GT and GTS. Yep. Really sweet stuff. I'm looking forward to that.
And
immensely.
We get to see our friend Brian Korn.
Yeah.
We're on track at Mid-Ohio in the Touring Car B-Spec. So that'll be very cool. I'll have to try and track her down this weekend.
Very cool. And that leads us to the section of the show where Mike Shaw gives us the around the world of rally in 22 seconds.
Yes, about what we got left this hour. My goodness.
Suddenly, Mr. Weitzel has been possessed by Mr. Peachin.
Well, he left the show to do work-related stuff, so...
he saved the world, so, all right. Yeah. I'll give him a pass.
That's what he says he's doing.
Well, first of all, I'm going to start off with an amazing event that happened in Rally America last weekend, which is awesome. The New England Forest Rally has finally taken place after a two-month break. It was a long break from STPR to finally get up to New England and get that underway. The teams are just testing and getting their cars all buttoned up and ready for the event. Is Ken Block, of course, out there. What's interesting about Ken is, you know, he's got his stuff that he does with the Rallycross, and he actually takes the same car and has to convert it into regular rally. That hybrid Hoon vehicle thing that he calls it. And it's definitely quite the concept there. But amazingly, it still works pretty well in both configurations. And So, you know, him versus Higgins. And then, as we mentioned last week, it was Antoine Lesage came back in a 2003 Hyundai Tiburon. So that was definitely an interesting car. Unfortunately, he was lacking a little bit in technology. Doesn't have the electronic diffs that both Block and Higgins have. Doesn't have the sequential gearbox. He's actually using an old manual in the thing. But he wasn't too far behind in that thing. He was definitely, he was pushing. But it, beautiful looking car on the stages, though, but by all means. This was probably one of the closest battles between all the different classes that we've had all season. And it just goes to show that the rally can be just as exciting as any circuit racing. These guys drive, you know, 100 miles of these gravel stages, and it turns out the win can be that by just a few seconds. And that's really what it turned out with. You know, Ken Block started off with a good lead, but Higgins was literally 2 seconds behind him, then 3 seconds behind him. Block then finally, you know, got a little bit of a push and ended up 30 seconds ahead, you know, going in day two. And, you know, he had a little bit of a gap, but then for the next day, Higgins just kept crawling back time after time, pushing a little bit more. It's so exciting how these guys can just go back and forth, even though it's not even side-by-side racing. In the end, it was Ken Block did take the win, but only by 6.5 seconds in the end. He ended up having an alternator problem going into stage 11, which was one of the last services that they're going to take, and actually got towed into service by a fellow competitor.
Wasn't that Rifat? Rifat's own car.
Rifat towed him into service. They ended up driving most of stage 11 without any communication in the car. They actually had the intercom off.
That's brutal.
That is brutal. They said 11 of the 13 miles they had no intercom. So that was stretching it. But they were able to finish that stage. You know, they hemorrhaged some time, but were able to hold on to it. You know, Higgins, like I said, was close behind. Him and Craig Drew were only 6.5 seconds at the end there. But, you know, they just couldn't quite keep up with the pace. They fought really hard. It was really exciting to just see the back and forth. One thing that was actually kind of controversial, though, is on the very last stage, and this has happened before, they hit that 80 mile per hour limit. I don't know if you know about the average speed limit with Rally America, but kind of their artificial way of slowing the cars down is once you hit an average speed of 80 miles per hour, they won't compute time any faster than that.
Oh, so they got on stage.
Right.
Oh, no, so they ended up that's messed up.
So they get a tied time.
Isn't that kind of like the old, you know, Doug, what you did, the auto, what was it? The road rallies or whatever.
Yeah. What's called a time speed distance rally.
TSC. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that.
That's not a performance rally.
No,
exactly.
Performance rally should be about performance.
As long as you can get your car fast enough, it's just a matter of hoping your car is always that fast and nobody else can get close to it.
Yeah, exactly. That you know.
I mean, I think it's up to the driver and co-driver and the team whether they feel that they're fast enough to be safe enough, you know. I mean, that's what the safe equipment's for and how they, you know, yeah, you have rules and regulations on how strong everything has to be, weight limits, things like that, right?
Right.
That's how you really kind of control that kind of thing, in my opinion. An artificial speed limit, I'm not a fan of it myself.
Well, apparently you're wrong.
Well, you know, I wonder how long Rally America is going to get away with this type of stuff and still be able to have a majority of the national level rally events, you know, before other organization takes it over.
Until this year, I've not heard of it being an issue. So, you know, maybe this is something that would go into a rules change now that they've been bumping into it multiple times.
I've heard of the rule before, but I don't hear, I don't remember hearing if it had actually come into effect. The only thing I can think is it's a concession to local governments and everything like that, saying, you know, we're not going to be too fast on your roads.
Right, exactly. You know, that could be part of it, but I don't know. The difference between going 75 miles per hour and going 85 miles per hour on a gravel road, whatever.
Yeah.
I do 75 miles an hour on a gravel road.
It's a gravel road. Everybody goes 75 on it.
Back up in the top class, unfortunate for the Tiburon, he had Anton Lestage had transfer box issues and coolant issue. The car was overheating, and he kind of hemorrhaged time trying to keep up. And then the final nail in the coffin was on the 11th stage. They actually sheared off the tire bolts,
the lug studs.
Yeah. Thank you. Brain fart. Anyways, the studs had sheared off and they couldn't replace the tire, obviously, with that. And they were stuck just on the side of the road. Sad end. They tried, but I'm really hoping they get that MMR WRC Lancer back for Obidjoui, or however you say it, which will be the next round.
Actually, I've got some news about that real quick.
Yeah.
Our good friends at Poor Boys Racing, Josh Tons and his crew, are going to be giving us some photos and some from the stage reports of their weekend awesome. Up there in Minnesota. So, yeah, very excited about that.
Minnesota. All right.
Minnesota. Yeah, stuff, you betcha.
You betcha. that'll be great. I honestly think it's going to be just as close there, if not closer racing, especially if the WRC car is back. And that was, of course, just the top class guys. Then, of course, we had Super Production. Really, the battle wasn't there there for first place. It was David Sterix and Karen Jankowski, once again, just dominating. They won yet again by a huge margin, multiple minutes. And you kind of just... Everybody else was way behind, but they still didn't have the competition that they had before. We're missing Lachlan O'Sullivan. He wasn't there. And, Duplessis, he doesn't, race Super Production, but, this is Super Production, but, just kind of missing some of the names that we had seen before. And, it would have been nice to see a closer battle there. But for second place, what was really exciting actually was between, Nick Roberts and Mason Moyle. Those guys were battling it off from the very beginning. Now, Mason Moyle, he's a young kid. He's like 21, 22. But he's been rallying for a while. He actually did his first rally right after his 16th birthday.
Nice.
He's been a big fan of it. This year, watching this kid has been awesome because this year he's got this really experienced co-driver named John Hall, a Canadian guy who comes from Great Britain, where he actually co-drove in the British Rally Championship. And so, the guy has got major experience, older guy that really knows his stuff and perfect for a young kid to learn from. And he's battling for a podium again for the third time this season. Normally he'd just kind of fall into place there if everybody else broke and he didn't. But here he's actually challenging for the second place podium between him and another driver and pushing his limits. And at the end of the first after the first service, they were 1 second ahead of the other guy. I mean, it was that close. And it finally, in the end, they pushed just a little bit harder and able to secure their second place on the podium ahead of Nick Roberts. So it really cool to see young guy, moving up there. And I'd expect, give him a couple of years, he just might be a Super Production champion.
Cool.
So, yeah, I think it could happen. Unless Lachlan O'Sullivan comes back and ends up stomping there. But I think he's got aspirations maybe elsewhere. And speaking of those kind of elsewhere aspirations, David Sterix, who has dominated in Super Production this season, he got an interesting offer. Apparently, he's been looking into doing that Global Rallycross stuff. Obviously, everybody wants to be on TV, which they should televise Rally America summaries, but that's a whole other thing. But apparently, as he's been doing talks with them, an opportunity came up where he is actually going to be at X Games LA driving the GRC Hyundai from last year that Reese Millen had put together.
Oh, nice.
So Hyundai is not an official manufacturer, with the GRC anymore. They were last year. But they end up kind of pulling out of all their racing in the United States, putting most of their energy really into the WRC that they plan on being in next year. But
were they not an official manufacturer for the hill climb?
No, they were not. Nope,
okay, so that wasn't a factory-based effort that the
no,
race
it was
had.
Not. Okay. Factory-supported, not factory-based.
Okay.
That's why it was really, you know, the only people really pulling that was, you know, helping out a lot with that was Red Bull again. You know, Red Bull was actually featuring both Reese and Sebastian Loeb. It's obvious who they gave most of the attention to.
Well, yeah, I mean...
and Warren.
Why wouldn't they?
Right, exactly. But if you look at previous seasons as well, previous runs, Reese was also sponsored by Red Bull and all the online videos or whatever with Red Bull on that. So even though it's a Hyundai, you got some help from them, but it wasn't a Hyundai factory-backed situation. So it'll be interesting to see that add to the X Games stuff. And then just kind of to go over into the two-wheel drive, that was probably the most stacked field of competition in Rally America. You had Will Orders in that GT86 that they had brought in. They'd done a bunch of improvements on it since I saw it at the Nameless Performance Rally. Then you have Brendan Reeves and Rhiannon Smythe, the other Australians. They're out there. They won the last two. Then you have ACP, Doug's favorite, who had done some major changes to the suspension configuration on the car and was saying it was feeling faster than it's ever been. Dylan Van Wey, you got to watch out for him. He's a quick kid, and his Fiesta is turbocharged versus the R2 that Reeves and Smythe drive. And then you can't really count out Chris Greenhouse. That guy's got that turbocharged Neon, and he's just kind of always kind of, you know, stayed in everybody's rearview mirror, not too far behind. And if somebody slips up, boom, there he is. Unfortunately, after day one, there was already casualties. Van Wey's engine went, and then it was Greenhouse lost not one, but both drive shafts. How does this guy do it? That's the second time he's lost both drive shafts. I think it's basically he loses one and then all the torque goes to the other one and that doesn't handle
it.
So, tough luck for him, and they ended up having to DNF. But really those top three of ACP, Reeves, and Will Orders just battling it back and forth, trading stages all through day two. Will Orders had the lead to begin with. And then not until stage 11, where it gets a little bit tighter and twistier, where the rear wheel drive doesn't quite perform the same as the front wheel drive car of the R2, which kind of stands on its tippy toes, I guess, if you will, as it goes around all those tight curves. That's where Brendan Reeves finally was able to claw into the lead. And then ACP, he had actually won a couple of stages as well. Still couldn't quite perform as well as the Australians, but it was, yeah, Reeves taking the win, his third in a row, a hat trick, his third event ever in Rally America. So three events, three wins, and followed by Will Orders in the GT86, which looks and sounds awesome. Do a search on YouTube and find some videos. It just, that car is badass. And then ACP takes third, so... awesome event, and like I said, when Ojibwe comes up, I expect it to be just as tight there. Moving on into the World Rally Championship, we have some news of Petter Solberg wanting to make a comeback in the WRC. Are we surprised?
No,
but disappointed maybe?
Disappointed that he wants to come back, or?
Well, okay. Here's how I look at it. He was a brilliant driver. I loved watching Solberg drive. I loved watching the passion. But it was kind of like when Schumacher said, "I'm going to come back and drive for Mercedes." We're like, "No, don't do this." and just no, don't do it. Because what has he got? What is there to gain, I guess? Just the joy of driving, I suppose. But is
he
really going to have a genuine chance at a championship?
If he gets a factory seat at Hyundai, yes.
Hmm.
You have
a lot of optimism for the Hyundai effort, I think.
Well, if money does talk a lot. But I mean, he's got the ability to win rallies and to win championships. I mean, there's no doubt about it. If you look at his stage times that he's had obviously some mechanical issues, puncture issues, and he's made his own mistakes without a doubt. But I mean, if you look at when he was just backing himself, right? When he was just a privateer, look at how well he did. it was very impressive. And he's using secondhand parts. He's not getting the first run of the, you know, the new homologation stuff. And, you know, you have to think that, you know, if he had a proper car underneath him. Now, he did with Ford. Without a doubt, he had it with Ford. Mm-hmm. But does anybody typically win with their first season in a factory? Okay, Sebastian Ogier. But that's not a common occurrence. So I think if he gets behind the wheel of something with enough test time, like a Hyundai, sure, why not? Now, the car has to be competitive, obviously. And we'll have to see what comes of that. But they're putting a full factory effort behind it with the money. They're not doing it half-assed like Ford.
Okay. I'm just saying that Hyundai is no, they're no Volkswagen. And I'm, even though they're throwing lots of money at this, you know, I remember back when both Toyota and Honda were involved in Formula One. They threw insane amounts of money, and they didn't have crap to show for it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you got to get the right minds behind it and whatnot. You know, it depends on who they get for engineers. I'm forgetting his name. The guy that's the head of doing the Hyundai project, though, is well known. He worked with Peugeot, and you know, he helped get them to develop their very well run the 207 and the 208 project before, you know, he left. So, and that 208 is what ended up being a Pikes Peak winner, you know, and he was part of that development in its early days. So, you know, you get the right people behind it and the money, you could have something. But yeah, again, we don't know how competitive that car is going to be. Basically, what Solberg is going to be out at Rally Finland, which is the next round, kind of interviewing. he's going to be having some high-level meetings with teams and see what can happen. You know, Solberg has said many times, though, he doesn't want a privateer again. So he's going to have to end up with a factory team if he's going to drive. What Solberg brings in addition to his driving ability is his personality and his showmanship. If you want to just promote the brand, he's pretty good at that, too. You know, obviously, you need to win again, too.
When you say it like that, though, he's going back and interviewing, like, you know, helmet in hand, basically. It just comes across to me as very Dixon-esque. You know, going around, please, sir, may I drive some more? You know, and, you know, man, I don't know. This is me, you know, with a little bit of hero worship thinking, you know, don't go out on a real stinker, or more of a stinker than you already have, right? I want to remember the championship days from
2003,
2004. Yeah, with the Subaru, you know.
Yeah. You know, the tough thing, and really what it is for any team with Petter Solberg, and this is what we talked about with Colin Clark, is he's his own worst enemy. You've got to have a team, you know, the team principal that is strong enough to keep control of Petter Solberg.
Yeah.
Because he will try and control everything himself and try and control it like it's his team. When Subaru had, it was either David Lapworth, I think, in the earlier days. I think that's who it was. Anyway, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, the rules were strong with him. And obviously he wasn't he was a younger driver and at the time and wasn't already a champion, but it seemed like things were going their way with Subaru because they said, your job is to drive. You communicate what you need the car to do, but your job is to drive, right? And when later on, when they changed, you know, team principals, that's when Solberg started kind of making decisions and trying to get the team to change and how they were doing things with the car, and not what you want necessarily the driver to do. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Like I said, I like Solberg. I'd like to see him get another run and do a better end than he had before. But like you said, yeah, it would suck for him to come back in and end even worse than how he left already.
Yeah.
So, but I think he's got the ability. I still think it's there. And the flame hasn't gone out yet, so we'll see. In other World Rally news is that Poland is apparently set to be in the 2014 World Rally Championship. They actually returned. They were last featured in 2009. So who goes on the chopping block then? That's the question. We've already got a 13-round season as it is, but they always complain about the costs. You know that locked in is going to be Monte Carlo, Sweden, Mexico, Portugal, Argentina. You know, these guys are all locked in. Finland, of course, Germany, France, Spain, those will all be there. So who's going to go? Is it going to be Sardinia? Is it going to be Greece, which is known as the ultimate car breaker?
Well, man, I hope the Acropolis rally does not go away.
I agree. I would really, really like to see the Acropolis stay. That, I think, if there was one that I would say go, it would be Sardinia. And then there is the Australia/New Zealand. They keep alternating each year. There's been, you know, some talk of them dropping doing that region completely. The tough
thing
is,
keep throwing rocks at the competitors.
Yeah, that's happened before. You know, it's not a common occurrence, thankfully. But
no,
that's happened at other places.
No.
That's happened
I just remember, what was it, a couple years ago, they, or was it last year, Mr. Weitzel?
Yeah.
That they had some environmentalists getting all crazy go nuts.
Year before last.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was a couple years.
Because last year was New Zealand. 2 years ago was in Australia, and I think it happened in Australia.
Yeah. It was definitely the Australian round.
The tough thing is that do we still call it a World Rally Championship if it's really the Euro Americas Championship?
Well, it is in two hemispheres.
Okay.
So
Yes, it's a huge cost to travel these, you know, cars all over, you know, these different places. But, you know, I guess that's one thing that makes it great, right? And it makes it difficult. That's why it is a World Rally Championship. I understand the idea of trying to curb costs, but I'd rather have is a more, maybe we need to try and condense a couple of the European rallies closer together in time frame.
Yeah.
And then we could add. So keep, let's say, the New Zealand, Australia thing going back and forth. I think that works okay. And then I think I'd like to see us go back to Japan. That'd be great.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I often wondered why there wasn't a Japanese round. Because
they don't make Fords or Citroens.
Well, no, but Rally is such a... it has such a huge attraction in Japan and such a huge following.
I agree.
I think that a mixed surface rally in Japan would be fantastic. I think it would be a great success.
Well, and where do all the sport tuners that take small displacement engines and turn them into high horsepower, you know, fire breathing monsters? Where did that all start?
In Japan, yeah. And,
yeah, exactly.
And in the mountains of Japan, running up and down the mountain passes, mountain roads. It's not that, these cars were being built and developed for a nice, smooth racetrack. They were being built and developed to race on real roads. I think that that a Japan round would be ideal. I think that would be really fantastic and extremely successful.
I agree. I think it would be. The fans there are great, and I think with I guess there's nothing else to say about it. I think it's going to be great there. In other news, kind of moving along. Remember how we were talking about Tommi Mäkinen supposed to be coming back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not quite.
Oh.
It turns out that he had really kind of done this as a big promo thing. He's going to be he's going to race one of his classic WRC cars, a Mitsubishi Lancer, on one stage, the Killary Super Special, on the day before or just before the WRC cars actually tackle it. But he isn't actually going to be racing the event, not in any of the classes. All of this was to support a new app being created. I know. I must say it's kind of marketing genius, really. We were all kind of on the edge of our seats. Come on, McEnany's going to come back, really? But maybe he's smart enough not to pull a Schumacher.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the idea is this, it's a new app. Actually, it's kind of cool. You can follow the event, and actually has video footage from Mäkinen in car showing the different parts of the stages. So let's say you go out to an event, you look at your app, and you can see it's like, oh, what driving line should the cars be coming through this area? And, you know, it's supposed to be pretty cool. It's already available on Android devices and supposed to be coming out for the iWorld August 1st. So... I think that's some pretty cool stuff, but the marketing of it was kind of cheesy. And then in final WRC news, got the awesomest rally event of the weekend coming up, or of the year coming up this weekend. The Rally Finland, the Grand Prix of the WRC.
Nice.
There'll be yumps and jumps
yumps!
And high speed and if somebody goes offline, the crashes will be huge.
Yes, there will be a terrible, terrible price to pay.
And honestly, go to YouTube, and there's a three and a half minute little special thing that WRC did. If you look at WRC on YouTube, they have their own channel that they did about the Finland crashes, and you will see how many times a Subaru can actually roll.
Take off your shoes. Awesome. You're going to need the extra. You're going to need your toes to help count.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes, for sure.
Your fingers won't be enough.
it just hit that perfect part where it just kind of kept pirouetted. You know, just kind of kept going and going, going. It was rather humorous. And humorous in that nobody was hurt. Everybody walked away from all the incidents. So have to state that. But Finland is going to be an awesome event. I think this is going to be Mikko's. Kind of his employee review for Citroen, because if he doesn't perform, if he doesn't end up coming out with a podium, at least second place, I think he's on the chopping block for Citroen next year.
And honestly, I think his WRC career as a championship contender is done.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're just not competitive. I mean, he's usually so much more consistent.
Yeah.
And it's just been an abysmal year. It really has.
It really is a story of lost potential.
Agreed. So yeah, I look to see. I mean, he has potential there. I mean, Finland is his home event. He usually does very well there. I'm really excited for that. Now the other question is, out of Latvala and Ogier, who do you think would win out of those two? Yeah, good one, huh? Because Latvala's really come into his own with that car. When they, Argentina, they were able to do a change to the car with the differentials, which fit Latvala's driving style a lot better. And look at how well Latvala's done since then. He won in Portugal, was it? And then he's been up near the top, you know, unless he's had a mechanical issue. So, I would say I'd give this one to Latvala just because of his home experience there over Ogier.
Yeah, I could see that. But man, Latvala has such a tendency to overdrive in Bennett.
You have to overdrive Finland a bit, though, don't you?
A bit. But, you know, there also has to be some tempering as well, you know. And, man, although... It is the very fast flowing type of stages that benefits Latvala's style, I think, a little bit better. But man, it also a rally that punishes severely any kind of mistake.
It does. So I'm gonna say Latvala for the win on that one though. Ogier second, and you know what? I don't know. Osberg or Hirvonen will probably take third. I think Hirvonen likes that event enough. Unless he just can't get comfortable with the car. Weather's looking to be good. There is some dust, but it shouldn't be a huge issue there because, you know, it's kind of just rolling hills with where the trees aren't going to cloud in and, you know, keep all the dust there. There'll be any slight breeze will blow it away. So I think it'll be just an epic year there. Other thing that'll be interesting there is that'll be in the WRC2 classes, we're going to have the introduction of those new R5 cars.
And Team O'Neill's bringing an R5, aren't they? One of the M Sport is being built by Team O'Neill. Didn't I see that on their website?
I did not go to Team O'Neill's website. I did not see. However,
we'll
that would
have to
be
double check that.
Awesome.
Then.
I know
I might be in error there.
Dirtfish has been working with some European guys, but I don't think they're in an R5 yet. I think they've been working with the guys in the British Rally Championship. But this R5 it's fast. It's fast. You're really kind of just once barely a half a step down from a WRC car. I think if you're going to really compare it to something, it'd be those regional rally cars, which pretty much is a WRC car with a slightly different restrictor on it and like a heavier hood, you know, a little less carbon fiber.
Yeah.
And so we'll end up having Robert Kubica from the Formula One. He'll be racing in this event in that WRC2 category. And oh, shoot. You know what I forgot to totally mention? Chris Meek's ride. Holy crap. Chris Meek is actually going to be in a WRC car.
Oh, nice.
He's going to be driving in for Citroen. I can't believe I totally blazed on that. Chris Meek is going to drive for Khalid Al-Qasimi, who's not going to be able to make the event. So Yeah, that's a huge thing. Now, talking about Nico trying to drive for his job, there's a person that could take it away easily. So, I forgot to put him up there. Gosh, I don't know where he'd finish. I'd definitely put him in a top five if he doesn't make it to the podium. So, yeah, back to the WRC2 stuff, though. We've got Hayden Padden from New Zealand. He'll be there in a Skoda Fabia S2000. You got, like I said, Robert Kubica in the RRC car. You've got some of the new R5 cars that'll be competing. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Esipakalapi, I think that's how you say his name. He's the Finnish guy that's been dominating in the Asia-Pacific Rally Championship, and the kid is quick. That's the one that they've been saying he's faster than God. Okay, little bit of a step there.
Be careful about that.
Exactly.
Doug Vadi was faster than God tonight, but unfortunately God sent the locusts to his property.
Yes, if you listen carefully in the background. Doug's got the cicadas going crazy out there.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, I'm in the great outdoors this evening, so I don't disturb my baby girl who's sleeping soundly, and we like it when she's soundly. And I must apologize that the Team O'Neill connection I saw was just them excited that the R5s were going to debut in Finland. They were referencing M Sports article.
Ah, I see. You know, it'll be great to see that car. You know, I think that's a car that should make it over here to the States. You know, it's got that price cap of 180K euro on it. And I mean, not to say that that's affordable, but if you look at what Block's car costs or Higgins' car costs, I think that definitely could be a great car to bring over to the States.
Well, is it within the price range of someone? Someone like Last Ditch or some of the other open class competitors that aren't Higgins and Block. Maybe Lestage, but you know, anyone
right,
else?
Right, you know, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of these guys that they start out with is they'll buy a used car, right, when it's already rallied before. And then they, you know, they'll make improvements to it as it goes on. So that's why you see a lot of these cars are 2004, 2005 Subarus.
Well, that's always, you know, as I look at taking this SBT and slowly getting it higher and higher prep for Rally, you know, I go to a special stage and Rally Anarchy, and the repeated chorus that I hear is don't build a rally car. Buy a used rally car.
Yep. And if you're starting out, it's the way to go, for sure. But there also comes a point where if you're going to go to that next level, you're not going to get it with an improved old technology.
Okay.
Right? So, this would be a car that would compete more at the top level, definitely. But you've got these guys that are already investing 150 grand into an open class car. I mean, look at Adam Yeoman and his co-driver that are FY Racing. You know, they went to an open class Subaru. It's an 05 that they've been working on, but you know, you wreck it and you have to rebuild the whole darn thing and all that stuff. I mean, how many K have they put into that car?
Well,
you know?
But when you're talking about the R5, 180 euro. You're looking at what, approximately 250,000-300,000 US, right?
I think you're looking at 250.
Yeah,
yeah, the exchange rate isn't that bad. It's
so
actually
you're,
more like
you're still looking
maybe.
At a quarter of a million, a hundred large more than right now. And I, you know, I have to ask that with no TV, no other media outlet, not even a mention on fuel or any other backwater station. You know, there's no exposure for Rally America outside of us. I
agree with that, and that's what's going to make that's how that car come over here. You know, that's the only way it could, is if there was some sort of coverage. I don't disagree with that. It's definitely going to be sponsor driven. But you know, if Block sticks with the series, if Pastrana would come back over, that would be great. You know, as this GRC stuff grows, and people start looking at these small cars doing rally-ish stuff, and these guys cross over and do both stage rally as well. it could get the coverage that we're hoping for. And, you know, maybe it's just a pipe dream, but like I said, I think, and the other thing is you'll see used ones, right? The Fiesta R2 has become this the new staple, right? It used to be that the staple was get yourself a VW Rabbit or GTI, Golf GTI, right? That was a staple car. You're not finding parts for them anymore. And look, the secondhand Fiestas are starting to get cheaper, right? So this is going to be a trickle down economics that'll happen. You're going to end up getting used R5s, maybe not now, but 3-4 years down the road, it could happen.
Okay, now that I will buy. That I will buy. But I'm not looking.
If it's going to happen with a brand new
coming
one
to Rally America next year,
I don't think next year. You know, the only way it could happen next year is if there is TV coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But like I said, I think the platform though could make it, and it could make it over here. I mean, one of the big things they pushed is using more factory parts on the car to make it affordable. Where they're actually taking, like in the Fiesta R5, the radiator is actually out of their Edge pickup truck is the radiator in the front of that Fiesta. So, you know, just taking these common parts from other vehicles that are manufactured by the company and sticking them in there and it doing the job. So anyways, it'll be exciting to see how those battles turn out. You got the R3 category. It'll be racing in Finland as well. So they'll have their two-wheel drive stuff, including the turbos and non-turbo two-wheel drive stuff. R3s, R2s, and the R1s, which are pretty much just factory. And then you've got, finally, the Academy is back running again. So you have the WRC Academy out there. Yeah, quite the thick field for Finland. And tune in for the weekend. It'll be a long event. It'll be Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and finally finishing on Sunday. But it is still fun to listen to. Tune into WRC Live on the WRC website. It's a great one to follow. So that's it for Rally News, now that I rambled on.
Well, I think that puts a wrap on tonight's show. Mr. Weitzel, anything else from your end?
Nope, nothing else. Cigars, beer, gin,
and
all kinds of good stuff.
And I am so jealous. I would love to come and hang out and do that. Although, as I was mentioning over chat, I did get at least my fill of beer this last weekend going to the Oregon Brewers Festival. So I did get to try a number of beers. Some tasted like crap, but some of them were rather delicious. So.
Well, you didn't have the entertainment of enjoying beers while watching Sean make an abject fool of himself after having had way too much beers.
See that yes. Yes, that sounds rather enjoyable.
And it's entertaining.
Yes. Let me assure you, the lost episodes of the Open Paddock podcast were quite enjoyable, too.
Yes. They're sort of like, oh, no, those can't be the light of day.
Yes.
All right. Well, Mr. Weitzel, I will see you in Mid-Ohio. In fact,
yep.
I'm heading out here in 7 hours' time from now.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. Head to Indiana, and then we'll be heading to Ohio on Thursday night. So.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your time in the Hoosier State, and come on over to the Buckeye State, where we have an Ohio State University, not the Ohio State.
Oh, okay.
University. Yeah. It's more than one Ohio yes. University.
That's messed up,
it's
man.
Just an Ohio State University. Ah, well, anyway, moving forward. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking with you all this evening, and listening, thank you.
Weekend, next weekend, guys. I'm jealous.
Yeah, well, you know, Mike, maybe we'll get this figured out where we'll all be at Pikes Peak next year. That'd be freaking awesome.
That would be
pretty darn cool.
But we shall see. Well, good night, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Good night.